It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Another bombing in northern Nigeria. A Sudanese Christian woman released from prison, a long South African platinum strike, appears to be over. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. 8 people were killed, at least 20 others wounded by a bomb Monday that tore through the grounds of the School of Hygiene in the Nigerian city Kano. Usman Yahaya is a student there.
We have bomb blast in the school, and at least 23 students have injured. Why 13 they have already dead. And also altogether we have about 33 students that dead.
Police say they've detained a suspect in that blast. In Cameroon, Chinese workers have abandoned road projects and mining exploration out of concern for their safety amid the presence of suspected Boko Haram militants in the country's north. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports.
Cameroon's Minister of Public Works, Patrice Ambassala, told VOA that he suspended construction by Chinese workers along the Ngaoundere-Kusere Road after the workers raised concerns about their safety, and the majority of them left the area.
How can we explain the fact that the growth and the development of country can stop because of this kind of action? The Ministry of Defense and National Security have to work and put the security there to allow this company to work without any fear.
Ambassador said the suspension of construction work on the road will deal a serious blow to the African Development Bank and European Union-funded project, which is intended to link Cameroon's capital Yaoundé to Chad's capital N'Djamena with a new highway. The Chinese ambassador to Cameroon says he discussed the issue with the Speaker of Cameroon's National Assembly and wanted to know the progress of negotiations for the release of 10 Chinese workers kidnapped from the north of the country by suspected Boko Haram militants in May. Moki Edwin Kinzika, VOA News, Yaoundé.
An Egyptian court sentencing of 3 Al Jazeera journalists to 7 years in prison on charges of supporting the banned Muslim Brotherhood and spreading false news has drawn international condemnation. The 3 sentenced include Australian Peter Grest, Egyptian-Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Bahar Mohamed. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry harshly criticized the ruling during a briefing Monday in Baghdad.
Today's conviction is obviously, it's a chilling and draconian sentence. It's deeply disturbing to see in the midst of Egypt's transition. It simply cannot stand if Egypt is going to be able to move forward in the way that Egypt needs to move forward in order to respond to the extraordinary aspirations of those young people who twice came into Tahrir Square in order to demand a responsive government.
Al Jazeera has always maintained its employees were simply reporting the news. In Sudan, tribal clashes reignited in Darfur, leaving up to 20 dead. According to the French press agency, the UN African Union peacekeeping mission is investigating the violence involving the Misriya and Salabat tribes. A Sudanese woman sentenced to death for apostasy was freed Monday by a Khartoum court, rejoining her Christian husband and their 2 young children. The Court of Cassation threw out the death sentence against Miriam Ibrahim, a case that drew international attention. The news welcomed by U.S. spokesperson Marie Harf.
We also, at this point, continue to urge Sudan to repeal its laws that are inconsistent with its 2005 interim constitution, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. These actions would help demonstrate to the Sudanese people that their government intends to respect their fundamental freedoms and universal human rights. And as you know, this is a case we raised quite frequently with the government there. And welcome today's news.
The French press agency quotes her lawyer as saying Ms. Ibrahim fears for her life and has gone into hiding. In Egypt, the Associated Press quotes a security official saying a southern Egyptian court sentenced 32-year-old journalist Bashoy Armia, who is a Christian convert, to 5 years in prison on charges of inciting sectarianism. A South African union representing thousands of workers at platinum mines say a 5-month strike is over. The agreement to be signed today, workers are to report for work Wednesday. The union had demanded a more than doubling of the basic minimum wage, but agreed to a 20% pay hike over 3 years. The world's top platinum companies lost billions of dollars during the walkout. Workers went unpaid for months, and the South African economy contracted in the first quarter of this year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 24th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Human Rights Chief says Egypt's conviction of Al Jazeera journalists is a travesty of justice.
We know of at least six journalists who've been killed in Egypt in the past year and a half or so. But others have been beaten up, been attacked, been arrested, been prosecuted, or been sacked.
Rupert Colville is spokesman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Lawyers for a Zimbabwe editor jailed on terrorism allegations will file a bail application today, Tuesday. Nigerian officials condemned Monday's bomb attack on a school in Kano. And South Sudan's peace talks adjourned as parties blamed each other.
South Sudanese need peace, and peace is paramount, and it is a must that peace must come to South Sudan. So I hope those who are negotiating peace in Addis Ababa, especially on the side of rebel, understand this.
Attorney Wek Attorney, spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir, and we'll take you to Houston, Texas, to a celebration marking 149 years of freedom for African-American slaves. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says she is shocked and alarmed by the verdicts and heavy jail sentences handed down Monday to three Al Jazeera journalists by an Egyptian court. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, the commissioner is urging Egyptian authorities to promptly release the journalists and other media workers who are in prison for doing their job.
Al Jazeera journalists Peter Gressa, Mohamed Fahmy, and Baha Mohamed have been languishing in Egyptian prison cells for months on charges of aiding the Muslim Brotherhood. Monday, the men were convicted and sentenced to prison terms of between 7 and 10 years. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Navi Pillay says she is appalled by these verdicts. Her spokesman, Rupert Colville, says she sees them as just the latest in a string of prosecutions and court cases that are in breach of international human rights law.
Probably the worst of all are these huge mass trials that took place earlier in the year of people who are allegedly Muslim Brotherhood supporters, but not just put on trial for being a supporter of an organization that is now deemed to be a terrorist organization, but actually condemned to death. And those court cases were really shocking. I mean, the High Commissioner today called them obscene because there were hundreds of people, more than 500 in one case, 600 in another. And there were such cursory cases, and then people were sentenced to death. So that's clearly, you know, an absolute travesty of justice.
These cases and those of the Al Jazeera journalists, as well as others, are being tried under Egypt's anti-terrorism law and the so-called protest law. Colville says these laws appear to be used by the judiciary and others to silence people who are critical of the government. He tells VOA there should never have been a case against the journalists who were just doing their job. He notes international journalists usually enjoy some measure of protection against state harassment and intimidation. He says the situation of local journalists already is terrible and getting worse.
We know of at least six journalists who've been killed in Egypt in the past year and a half or so. But others have been beaten up, been attacked, been arrested, been prosecuted, or been sacked, you know, because they're deemed to have been reporting on sensitive issues. There's a climate of real fear surrounding journalism in Egypt these days, and obviously this case will just make it even worse.
The cases of the three Al Jazeera journalists are expected to be appealed. High Commissioner Pillay says Egypt's reputation, especially that of its judiciary as an independent institution, are at stake. She adds there is a risk that miscarriage of justice is becoming the norm in Egypt. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Lawyers for a Zimbabwe editor jailed on terrorism allegations will file a bail application today, Tuesday. On Monday, a magistrate jailed editor Edmond Kuzayi of the Sunday Mail newspaper on allegations of ridiculing the ruling ZANU-PF party. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Harare.
The editor of the state-controlled Sunday Mail Weekly, Edmond Kuzayi, was arraigned before the court for the second time since his arrest last week Friday. He was brought to court in handcuffs, wearing a khaki prison garb. Kuzayi is facing charges of attempting to subvert a constitutionally elected government and communicating statements that are prejudicial to the state. He is accused of running a faceless character on Facebook called Baba Jukwa that is critical of the ZANU-PF leadership. Provincial magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe remanded Kudzai behind bars, saying he had no jurisdiction to hear a bail application in such a serious matter, and asked the accused editor to approach the High Court. Kudzai's lawyer, Admire Rubaya, confirmed this development.
What has happened is that all the matters have been referred to the High Court for bail application. The reason being that the moment a person is charged with a third stage offense and the prosecutor general opposes bail, we have to apply to the High Court, not the Magistrates Court, because they won't have the jurisdiction. As of now, we don't know, but we are definitely going to fail today.
This followed submissions by State Counsel Tawanda Zwekare, who had suggested the bail application be heard in the High Court because it was a third schedule offense, meaning that it is a very serious matter. Although the state accuses the Sunday Mail editor of being the faceless cyber character, Baba Jukwa also posted messages on his Facebook page on Sunday while Kudzai was behind bars. Meanwhile, police are reportedly looking for the editor of the privately owned Zimbabwe Independent Weekly newspaper, Dumisani Muleya, who is currently on leave. The law enforcement agents reportedly visited the paper's offices in Harare but could not find Muleya. Police spokesperson Cherit Charamba confirmed that the police are keen to interview Muleya but could not disclose the reason. Recent newspaper articles linked two Zimbabwean journalists based in South Africa to the Facebook character, but the scribes have distanced themselves from Baba Jukwa. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
A Nigerian government spokesman has condemned perpetrators of Monday's bomb blast at the Bayero University School of Hygiene in Kano that killed at least 8 people and left many injured. Mike Omeri, the Director General of Nigeria's National Orientation Agency, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the government is saddened by yet another violent attack on an educational institution.
The government of Nigeria and people of Nigeria are not happy. By this continuing senseless killings of persons. It has not yet been profitable to anyone. It has only been bringing disaster and calamity to families, friends, and associates. So government is not happy about it. And the reports indicate, and I understand that about 8 people lost their lives, ability or others are receiving treatment in various hospitals in Kano. The National Emergency Relief Management Agency has been mobilized, mandated to move swiftly to Kano and also to provide relief and support to families where possible, especially victims who are recuperating. The scarcity agencies have also switched into swift action, and I'm sure that they will find some work and also be perhaps have links and be on the trail of those who have perpetrated this heinous act of cowardice.
Some people are expressing concern that people are increasingly afraid following the what appear to be escalating violence against unarmed civilians in Nigeria. How is the government going about to reassure people as well as improving security to protect these Nigerians?
Escalation is not, I don't think that is what it is. Of course, yes, there is growing incidents. Here and there are pockets of incidents of blast, but it's not escalating in a manner that you find everywhere in the cities and villages and so forth and so on. However, whatever the degree is, it is still of concern to government and citizens because everyone desires peace and wants to live in peace in a country that is fast growing. Government is concerned, like I said, and has ordered all forces to redouble their efforts. And I want to assure you that for every one blast, two or three others would have been averted by the actions of the security services, either at the police level or intelligence level or even the military level. So I am just optimistic that it won't be long before we are able to get past this. After all, reports indicate that some of the residents and people who perpetrated this are beginning to realize the folly of action, of their action, and belonging to that group of civilians.
Michael Marius, Director General of Nigeria's National Orientation Agency. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and today is Tuesday, June 24th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time, 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, on Monday adjourned South Sudan's peace talks indefinitely. The talks in Addis Ababa, which have been postponed a number of times since they began last month, stalled again last week over the opposition's claim that the multi-stakeholder talks were not inclusive. Lucy Pony of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Nairobi.
In a statement released, IGAD criticized the SPLM-SPLA in opposition for boycotting the talks, calling it a contradiction to the June 9th agreement signed between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar. That agreement provides for the inclusion and participation of other stakeholders in the negotiations. Opposition deputy spokesperson Mabior Garangdi Mabior says postponing the talks was unnecessary.
I can categorically say that we are not an obstacle to the peace. And it is unfortunate that that would be blamed because we have been told all this time that we should not play pointing games. And for the mediation now to start playing blame games is unfortunate. What our dissatisfaction was the flawed nature in which the civil society organizations were chosen. Because in these talks, we are the ones who have championed the cause of inclusivity.
Mabior says internally displaced persons and those who fled the country during the fighting should also be represented at the talks. He says civil society organizations represented in Addis were all selected from Juba. Mabior says all they're asking for is fair representation.
It's unfortunate that they have adjourned the talks because it will only prolong the war and the suffering of our people, and we want a short end to this war. So this is why we want direct negotiations with the government while they work out fair representation of civil society.
But presidential spokesman Atenyue Kateny says the government had no hand in the selection of civil society representatives to the talks.
The civil society are a very independent people, so they chose themselves. The government did not tell them on how to draw their delegates. It was the IGAD mediators themselves who came here to this country to look for stakeholders, and they found them. We went to the symposium, you know, with the knowledge that the civil society from the other side, you know, is called to come to Addis Ababa. So it wasn't our fault.
Atenyue says it's not too late for the opposition to participate in the talks aimed at restoring peace in the country.
South Sudanese need peace, and peace is paramount, and it is a must that peace must come to South Sudan. So I hope those who are negotiating peace in Addis Ababa, especially on the side of rebel, understand this. And the quicker they come to attend the fourth session of negotiation in order to expedite the signing of peace agreement so that we move to another stage, the earlier they do it, the better.
Mabior reiterated his side's commitment to end the conflict through the IGAD-mediated peace talks. He says his group believes strongly that the only way to end the conflict is through political dialogue rather than military means. Both the pro- and anti-government sides now say the 60-day deadline set by IGAD seems unrealistic due to the slow pace of the negotiations. IGAD says it's going to consult widely with stakeholders before announcing the resumption of talks. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says he will defeat the opposition in the 2016 election, even if it is united under a single candidate. Mr. Museveni's comments follow a recent meeting of a consortium of Ugandan opposition political parties and civil society groups at which they resolved to field a single candidate in coming elections. The group called the Free and Fair Election Campaign in Uganda also resolved not to use violence as a means of wresting power from Mr. Museveni, who has been in power since 1986. Olara Otunu is president of the Uganda People's Congress and convener of the meeting. He tells me that despite being told by Ugandans to take up arms against the government, the group prefers a change of government through democratic means.
Among the main conclusions we came to was to reiterate the position we have taken from the very beginning, that even though there is tremendous frustration in the country, tremendous bitterness, and young people in particular are saying, give us the gun. Don't waste time talking with Yoweri Museveni. You only understand the language of the gun. We have taken the position that we shall not pursue the option of violence. Rather, we shall use the method of positive, non-violent resistance in seeking to effect democratic and peaceful change in Uganda.
You notice that President Museveni himself has said that it will take a while before the opposition can come to power. So do you still believe that only through the democratic means that you want to seek power?
We have been all over the country, and the instinctive, immediate response of the people when we meet with them is Museveni doesn't believe in the ballot box. He doesn't keep any agreement he has signed. He keeps boasting of the fact that he came to power by the gun and he can only be removed by the gun, so give us the gun. In other words, this deep sense of frustration created by Museveni that only the gun can effect change is very widespread across the land. But knowing that, aware of that frustration and the depth of it, we have nevertheless made a conscious decision from the very beginning of our campaign that this campaign and the change we're talking about is going to be the ballot box. It'll be peaceful, it'll be democratic, no bloodshed. We also unanimously and enthusiastically came to the conclusion that we shall preserve our togetherness, we shall continue to work together with one voice and with one message, heading in one direction.
So
there is a by-election coming up soon. In that by-election, we shall field a single opposition candidate. And so on.
To seek a change through the democratic means, I know that the Forum for Democratic Change former leader, Chisa Besigye, has been arguing for electoral reforms. Do you think the opposition will be able to get those reforms before the next election?
The whole platform of free and fair elections, the purpose of the group is to press for a new electoral system, not for reforms. Reforms assume that you've got a system which is legitimate, which is functioning, but which needs some corrective measures. In this particular case in Uganda, we are talking about a system that is wholesale fraudulent and wholesale part of the NRM rigging machine. So you cannot reform it.
Olara Otunu is president of the Uganda People's Congress and convener of a recent meeting by the Free and Fair Election Campaign in Uganda. You are speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. People from many cultures and races came together in Houston, Texas, this past Thursday to celebrate the emancipation of African-American slaves in the area 149 years ago. As Greg Flickers reports from Houston, the annual Juneteenth holiday concert also celebrated the rhythms and sounds of Africa with a touch of Chinese music in the mix.
One of the most popular Juneteenth events in Houston each year is a free concert at the Miller Outdoor Theater in Herman Park, headed this year by New Orleans singer-songwriter Alan Toussaint and Texas blues singer Ruthie Foster. For many African Americans, Juneteenth is an important occasion to reflect on the end of slavery and their long struggle for equal rights.
And I'm just thankful for our ancestors. Because of them, we can sit out here and enjoy the wonderful music, perfect weather.
But Houston is now a city of many races and cultures. And Larry Coleman, who recently returned, appreciates that.
So Houston is really a diverse city. You know, I like the culture here, and that's one of the reasons why I moved back here, is because of all the diversity and, you know, cultural events, concerts.
One performer at this year's Juneteenth concert who represents that diversity is Vivalda Dula, who performs traditional African music mixed with Western elements. The Angolan musician says she can relate to the holiday that celebrates the end of slavery in Texas.
We African countries, we have in the same situation too. My country as well was colonized by Portuguese, so it's very important to be here and to celebrate the freedom that all of us deserve.
Dula also loves the diversity of Houston, where she met her Chinese friend, Xie Weiwei, an accomplished musician in her own right, who plays the traditional Chinese zither called a kusong. Dula asked her to play with her group, and Xie Wei was excited by the opportunity.
I was composing this song about child labor and human trafficking, and I thought it would be very interesting, not just doing the music, but combine cultures and combine traditional beautiful instruments to do it together.
The audience was enchanted by the sound, and Xie Wei was pretty happy with it as well.
I think it's pretty cool, yeah.
Vivalda Dula supports efforts by the International Labor Organization, ILO, to put an end to both child labor and human trafficking.
I'm using my song to actually help the ILO on their campaign.
And the audience responded enthusiastically to her message and to her music. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Houston.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Hosts Brazil beat Cameroon 4-1 in the capital Brasilia as Mexico dismissed Croatia 3-1 in Recife in Group A action on Monday. As a result, Brazil edged Mexico on goal difference to top the group, while Croatia placed third ahead of Cameroon. Elsewhere, Netherlands topped Group B with a 2-0 win over Chile in Sao Paulo. Outgoing world champions Spain salvaged a measure of national pride with a 3-0 victory over Australia. Netherlands and Chile advance to the knockout stage of the competition. As a result, Brazil will play Chile while Netherlands encounter Mexico in the knockout phase over the weekend. Staying in Brazil, action in Group C and D draw to a conclusion today, Tuesday. In Group C, Japan play Colombia in Cuiabá as the Ivory Coast tackle Greece in Fortaleza. Elsewhere in Group D, Italy play Uruguay in Natal as Costa Rica tackle England in Belo Horizonte. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. A listener mail for this Tuesday morning comes from Mohamed Ahmed Masuo of Monrovia, Liberia. He writes, "Dear VOA, the release of Mariam Yahya Ibrahim, the Sudanese woman who was sentenced to death by hanging for marrying a Christian man, is a welcome development. Justice has finally prevailed in Sudan." Thank you, Mohamed Ahmed Masuo of Monrovia, Liberia, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. An Egyptian court has sentenced three Al Jazeera journalists to 7 years in prison on charges of supporting the banned Muslim Brotherhood and spreading false news in a case that has drawn international condemnation. Speaking to reporters in Baghdad on Monday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry harshly criticized the ruling a day after speaking with Egyptian leaders in Cairo. That's it for this Tuesday, June 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Jesse Brooks, I'm James Botte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake. Umaru, wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.